All right. Hello and welcome, everybody. It is Monday, June 13th. Holy crap a moly. 2016. This is Jessica Stewart, and I am here with the October 2015 cohort. This is Coach the Coach 4, Practicum 4, Class 1. I am with Group C, correct? Yes?
Correct.
Everybody's in the right place? Good. So this is my favorite. I sound like a teenager. This is like my favorite practicum. Oh my gosh. Because it's a place where you guys can really pull together everything that you've been learning. It's a place where you can kind of practice any tool that you want to practice. You can meet your client exactly where you are. In many ways, I feel like this class is where you kind of go back to basics and build on those original first few practicum classes that you learned. Learning, you know, really the core tools, the say more, you tell me where I'm wrong, having a hunch, finding it, and then, you know, then moving into the tools based on where your client is. So in many ways, I feel like we are kind of going back to basics, but ultimately, you aren't that person anymore, that new coach who is just getting started. So you get to come and approach it from a new and fresh place, which I think very exciting. The best part to me is that I get to be here with you, and I get to encourage you to be willing to experiment. I'm here to facilitate a process with you. As part of that facilitation, you can make mistakes. You can ask for support. You can ask for me to jump in or guide you in a way that, I think is pretty fun. I know it can be really nerve-wracking as a student, but I think ultimately you're closer and closer to finishing up, so use me while you got me, is how I feel about it. So before we jump into actually doing some coaching and talking about exactly what we're going to be doing today, I'd love to just do a check-in with everybody. I don't think we've done this before, because I don't think I've had you guys before, but maybe I've had you in business classes, but in mind body, I know I've definitely had some of you there. And I met some of you at the meet and greet, of course. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to do a one-word check-in. And a one-word check-in is where you just take a moment, check in with yourself, and think of a word or a sound. It could be a sound. I've certainly had those. That is the embodiment or the encapsulation of where you are right now in this moment. And what I want to do is I want to kind of get everybody's voice in the room that's on the call. I want to take attendance so I know who's here. I also want to help ground you in this moment so we can all kind of honor and meet each other exactly where we are. So with that in mind, I'm going to just do this alphabetically based on my information here. So Katrina, one word or sound on how you're doing right now in this moment.
I'm trusting.
There were like three. It was like, and oh, and then trust. So I think we got, that's a very descriptive place. So thank you.
Thanks.
So Rachel.
I'm going to say open.
And hope.
I'm making the sound of a big exhale. I feel eager. I've been a little overwhelmed all morning, but right now I feel eager to just sit back and learn.
Perfect. Tessa, are you on the line? No? Okay. Joanna.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
My word is open.
Is what? I'm sorry,
open.
I didn't hear you, Joanne. Open?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then there is a little bit of feedback on, oh, thank you. And then Sarah. Are you here? Okay. Aida. No? Dee Dee.
Anxious.
Ooh. Okay. Well, we can hold space for Anne. And then Lyselle, she was here, and then I think she had to drop off. I'm not sure. Okay. And Adrian. All right. Lisa.
I feel bubbly.
Oh, nice. And then Catherine. All right. Gosh, a lot of people not here. I won't take it personally. I'm sure it's the time of year, I swear. So good. So trusting, open, eager, anxious, bubbly. We have room for all of those things. Is there anybody's name that I didn't call that maybe joined or just joined? Okay. So as I shared, Coach the Coach 4 is about bringing it all together. One of the things that I really encourage you to do as we move into this next, really the next four classes that we have together, is I want to encourage you to really focus on sort of that, I don't know, for those of you that were at the meet and greet, we spent that time doing what I call chaplaining. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was essentially where you're sitting and you're really fully listening and not waiting to talk. So it's like you're present and you're present to what the person is saying. You're not just quiet because you're waiting to talk. And I think that practicum four is that place for you to kind of settle in. And I understand there's going to be some anxiety and some eagerness and those things, and that's totally fine. But just to remember that listening is really the first place we go when we're coaches. So once you're kind of in that open receiving space where you're listening and really present to your client, what I like to do is I kind of like to just kind of get a sense of the landscape of what's going on in their life. And what I mean by that is I like to really listen and start to understand and figure out what square of change in the change cycle might this person be in. Sometimes I do it very consciously, but there's going to be a point where it becomes very much that second nature. Because what you're doing is when you're really listening and you're really tapped into what's going on in a client's life, what you begin to notice is that when you begin to notice what square they're in, you can also then begin to kind of narrow down the approach that you'll take working with your client and helping them figure out what it is that they actually need to work on. The reason I do this is because sometimes square three issues present as square one problems. But the difference is that in square three, it tends to be more of a habit, a thought, or a pattern that we're really needing to focus on breaking or changing versus actually melting down an identity. And so the approach that you might take in square three with a client who's in square three versus a client who's in square one might be very different. So, for example, for someone in square three, I find I kind of do a dance between sort of tenderness and toughness. And I don't mean like I'm a bully or I'm mean so much as that I might take someone in square three directly to a turnaround and creating evidence for how a belief is not true. Whereas in square one, where someone is really losing an identity or losing a part of themselves that they really, you know, they're really struggling with in some way, I might go more into that meditative space and really helping to separate out their thoughts and noticing their thoughts using my ACT tools or using the work, but really creating a much more sacred space or a sacred container to hold whatever grief they might be experiencing or pain or challenge in square one. And so that's why I encourage you when you're kind of getting into this place of doing Coach the Coach 4 is allow yourself the courtesy and the time to figure out where your client is, because it's going to help you in the long run help them. Does that make sense? Any questions about that so far? Is this something you've discussed before? Does this make sense? No? Yes?
I have a question on square three. This
okay.
is Dee Dee.
Okay.
When you said that you can spot someone who's in square three because they have formed habits, can you elaborate a little more on that, like give an example?
Well, I can spot someone who's in square three based on the circumstances of what they're experiencing, and then my approach is that I might actually help them break a pattern. And I see this very much in someone who is continually trying to, say, put their work out into the world, and they keep hitting roadblocks or challenges, and they go back to an old story, a very deeply ingrained story, that is evidence for why they can't or shouldn't be doing what they're doing. That's what I mean by patterns. We all have them. We have that sort of drone note of, I'm not enough, or, oh, you're never going to figure this out, or, you know, a lot of them are lizard fears as well, those top 10 tunes. And so when you start hearing those top 10 tunes, those sort of vague lizard fears that don't have any evidence behind them, but they really keep cropping up, we wouldn't really want to work a lizard fear or a lizard belief because there's really no basis for it. And so we wouldn't spend a lot of time doing thought work necessarily on a lizard fear because ultimately there's no foundation for it. And so we want to, in square three, we want to spend a lot more time helping them overcome the hurdle, giving them the turtle steps, helping them take action in a thoughtful way that will create evidence that that belief system that they've been holding or that is keeping them, quote, safe, isn't actually serving them. Does that make sense, Dee Dee?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Yeah, and you guys, my hunch is that you know what the difference feels like between someone who's in square one and someone who's in square three. You guys know sort of have you worked with people who are in different places, both square one, square three, and you could feel the difference between sort of the stuckness or the challenge or the meltdown? Anybody not have that experience?
No, I know the difference. And then just to do a quick overview of the squares. So in two, they're dreaming and scheming. If they're stuck in square two, it's because they're not going for it. They're not.
Yeah, people will get stuck in square two because they have some sort of, it's a safe place for them. It's usually a decoy, fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And so our job then is to help kind of figure out why are they stuck, what's keeping them in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, stuck is really that they're not in the change cycle anymore. They sort of catapulted them out of change, and they're sort of in a holding pattern. It's kind of like I imagine them going up into an airplane and being in a holding pattern above a square. And I think the reason that happens is because there is some limiting belief. There's some fundamental pattern that they need to examine. And so giving them more homework or more tools or, you know, spending more time helping them dream and scheme when they use dreaming and scheming as a decoy might not be the best way to move them forward. So that's what we're going to practice in practicum for, is really getting into what I think of as sort of the subtlety and nuance between the different squares and how we begin to approach change in a much more natural way, rather than being like, oh, and now you must use the metaphor tool. I mean, we do our best, but certainly this is really truly practicing meeting our client where they are and not having an agenda. So does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Great. How's your anxiety doing?
Less.
Yeah, good. So any other questions about coach, you know, practicum four, or any questions about tools or anything that might be left over from practicum three that you feel needs to be addressed?
Jessica, this is Hope. I have a question about the tools as they apply to each square in the change cycle. Do you recommend that once, if we have a clear idea of where we believe a client is in the change cycle, that we use the tools that we learned in that practicum, or do you recommend that we just use whichever tools seem like they might be most appropriate to the session that we're doing?
So if you look in the back of your binder, there is a listing called Additional Tools, and it actually highlights all of the different tools that are in Martha's repertoire and the squares that they fall into generally. My suggestion is both. So as a new coach, I definitely recommend that you learn how to play the scales before you improvise. So if you feel very, very uncomfortable using, say, the metaphor tool, I would suggest that you spend a little bit of time using the metaphor tool as it sort of is conceived before you improvise. I do think that you can use the metaphor tool for someone who's in square one or square two, depending on the issue they bring up. But generally, when you think about the metaphor tool, it's really a puzzle-cracking tool. It's about helping people get perspective from a particular issue that they're having. Puzzle-cracking happens in square three. It's the hero's journey. Does that mean you will never use the metaphor tool in someone who's in square one, two, or four? Absolutely not. I think part of it is just being really clear and sensitive to where a person is, because you can use a tool prematurely. I absolutely have. I would use a tool, you know, like a dreaming and scheming tool on someone who's still in square one, and it's just not going to work. You might have seen that in trying to use dream analysis on someone who's really deeply in square one. It just may not work. But it's just feedback for you. It's not failure. It's just beginning to notice, huh? So I'd say use your discernment and know that sometimes it's better to kind of, as you're learning and getting more comfortable with improvisation, that there is a time to just kind of keep it to basic. That help, Hope?
It does, yeah. I mean, I was thinking that it actually might be helpful for me to have some big pieces of paper up on my office walls that says square one and lists the tools, and square two and lists the tools. That felt a little rigid to me, but when I was on the phone with someone the other day, I realized that actually would have been really helpful to just glance at the list and think, okay, which one of these would be most appropriate given where she is in her own change cycle. So I might do that unless it's already printed for us, in which case I'll just...
It is already printed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good.
I guess ultimately, early on, I'm a fact finder. I don't know if you're a fact finder as well.
I'm like nothing but a fact finder practically.
Yeah, that was my suspicion. That is a very much a fact finder. And I say this because I am an 8 fact finder, so I know what I'm talking about. That's very much a fact finder's response to doing it right. And the quick start is like, oh, I'm just going to go and I'm going to do it. I'm going to see what happens. No big deal. Yeah, maybe there's going to be some beating up. Maybe there's going to be some pain afterwards or during. But ultimately, I think for you, don't let that become a crutch for you. Don't let that become a way for you to ignore your own intuition and to not trust yourself. That was very much a problem for me early on as a fact finder. Oh, I had to have everything put out. And, you know, I was like, oh, why do I feel like – and it was because I was carrying a limiting belief around, you know, trusting myself, not believing that I would know what to do in the moment. And once I kind of recognized there was, like, I don't have to do the body compass in session one, and I don't have to do the metaphor tool in session three, whatever, you know, the body scan, the body compass. You know, I kind of got into this very rigid way of thinking. Once I realized that I could really just improvise and listen and trust,
right,
that stuff became less important.
Got it.
It was
interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it was interesting because I was going completely by intuition, and I heard my client speaking, and I thought, oh, you know, I think we need to identify this thought cluster and name the story. So I was following my intuition, and then I guess it was, I don't know, a fact finder, a lizard, whatever we might call it, stepped in and said, wait, is that the right – are we in the right square to use that tool? And I started, like, flipping through my binder, like I told you earlier, to see if you know, it was in the appropriate square, because I didn't want to use it prematurely or, you know, pull her back. And I guess I'll just lighten up because it actually – I just used it and it worked fine. It was very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for practicing the tools in a very clear way. Like, it's like, oh, this is where this tool belongs. And then also giving yourself permission to improvise and to take a tool and – combine tools and mix them up and kind of get more playful with it. So I think for you, and probably for everybody, it's a dance. It's like always sort of understanding what your motivation is. Is your motivation to provide the best help for the client, or is your motivation fear? I don't want to fuck this up. Pardon my language. You know, that's where the dance is. It's like, what is motivating me to feel like I need more information right now? Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good. Any other questions? All right. So, with that in mind, let's do a little bit of coaching. And so I do things a little bit differently in Practicum 4 in that I like to ask you what involvement you want me to have during your practicum, or during your session, I mean. Do you want me to be actively jumping in? Do you want me to let you kind of go a little bit longer before I jump in? You get to decide. I just walked up and down the stairs because animals. Anyway, so I would love, Dee Dee, I think you offered to be a coach. Is that still working for you?
Sure.
Excellent. I see LaSalle, you're back on the line, so I just wanted to greet you. Hello.
Thank you. I may have to hop on and off a little bit. Is it disruptive?
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that I greeted you and said hello.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Did somebody else join since I took attendance?
Yes, I did. This is Sarah.
Great.
I accidentally was on the B group call, and I realized I don't know any of these names.
Yeah, you really want to be here.
On your call.
this is the place to be, Sarah. okay, so Dee Dee's going to be our coach, and we need a client. And the nice thing about Practicum 4 is you can be anywhere you are, exactly where you are. You don't have to be in a particular square. And Dee Dee is going to practice meeting you exactly where you are. So who would be willing to be our client for today? Everybody's got issues. Come on. Somebody's got something for us.
I'll go. This is Rachel.
So Sarah and Rachel. Excellent. So I'm going to start.
Oh, sorry. I didn't even hear Sarah talk.
That's okay. So I've got two clients. I'll need another coach later, so that's perfect. So Sarah, would you like to be our client or would you want to coach later?
I'd love to be the client.
Okay. And then, Rachel, I'll ask the same thing. Do you want to be a client or would you want to coach after Dee Dee?
Sorry, was that to me, Rachel?
I was
muting my phone. Can you repeat that?
Would you want to be the coach for the client after Dee Dee and Sarah go?
I'll be the client next, I guess.
Great. Okay. I just want to have that queued up. All right. Thank you. You can mute again.
Okay.
So, Rachel, Dee Dee, you're our coach.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah,
uh-huh.
You're our client.
Mm-hmm.
Dee Dee, what involvement, what role do you want me to take as your facilitator today?
I'm okay with you if your marmoset goes off or something triggers you. I don't have any problem with you going, hey, can I say something here? I don't mind that at all.
Okay, perfect. All right. So the floor is yours, madam. Please.
Okay. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. So what would you like to share with me today? What's going on?
Well, I spent the weekend starting to get all the content for my website down. And what I noticed is when it comes to my about page and all the content, I can get really overwhelmed and then shut down. And one piece, I'll just give you an example, was I was starting to think about, I think I was thinking about the about page and my story and my Helen back and all of that. And a lot of I had a very dysfunctional childhood. And so I'm thinking to myself, of course, I'm not going to go into detail about things on my website or anything like that, but this is the first time a lot of that's going to be going public, meaning my mother will see it and my stepfather and all of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get really overwhelmed, which is interesting, not necessarily about that. That's the trigger to get me overwhelmed with feeling like, well, I don't even know. What should I say? What should I not say? There's so much content. I don't know what to write. I'll just take a nap is kind of how that process went. So, yeah, I'm feeling really overwhelmed by it.
Okay. So overwhelmed, I'm hearing writing your story. So that sharing your story on your website is, have you done that? Have you finished that? Or is that still hanging out there?
No, I haven't. Well, it's such a long story, so I haven't finished it because I feel very overwhelmed by it. But as I was saying that, I remember that a big part of this is the being seen piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about all the people on my Facebook, you know, seeing that. And being seen is definitely a really big fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when that fear comes up, when the overwhelm comes up, like, what are the thoughts that run in your mind?
You know, well, now I'm judging the thoughts, but I keep thinking to myself, man, these are thoughts, these are very young thoughts, and I've spent a lot of time working on them, and that they're still there. So some of them are, I can hear my mother and my siblings, so you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about, let's see, what else is it? It's definitely those two, who are you going to help anyway? And a lot of, like, patting on the head, you know, people seeing it and saying, oh, poor Sarah, she thinks that she's going to be helping people.
Mm.
And kind of like that sort of cluster, a whole cluster around that.
Okay.
And then
are those thoughts that you believe? When those come up, when you imagine your family saying that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I imagine my family saying that, do I believe them? Is that what you're saying?
Right. I mean, yeah. Or when they come up, are you believing those thoughts? Do you think, they're right?
No, I intellectually no, I don't think they're right. What it feels like, and even as an adult, I know that none of these people mm-hmm. feel this way
mm-hmm.
about me now. It's very, very young. And so when it comes up, it feels, I can remember them saying things like that. So
okay.
I have a tough time when that very young, strong feeling comes up to
mm-hmm.
To do the work around it. And over the weekend, I noticed it. I was able to notice it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm noticing I'm mm-hmm. having these thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and do my work around it. But I really ended up feeling stuck still, even after I'm noticing the thoughts.
Right. So, I might need some help here, Jessica, because what's coming up for me is her inner child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the tools yet, but what's screaming to me here is that her inner child, she never took care of the child, and the child thoughts. So it's they're not her grown-up thoughts, but they're still her child thoughts that are coming up. So,
Sarah, does that idea, that concept resonate with you?
Yeah, and I've done years and years of work on my inner child and a lot of abuse work with all of that, and so I'm very, very familiar with it and can feel whenever that comes up. So,
That was my hunch.
That's new to me at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Scary or anything like that.
Yeah, so maybe let's just talk a little bit. What do you think is really going on for Sarah right now? What do you think? She shared some really very insightful.
Yeah.
And
I
get the sense she really knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she sees it. She sees that she gets triggered. She knows where it's coming from. She knows it's her past. She knows it's old limiting beliefs.
Yeah, so she feels stuck. She feels very young. Mm-hmm. Wrong feeling. She knows.
Mm-hmm.
What I heard, and Sarah, jump in if I'm wrong here, is she knows that this is not real in the sense that it's this little holding pattern that we were talking about, because there's this, you know, it sounds like the lizard to me, like, wow, you're about to take a really big step. The lizard is in full force. That reptilian brain is like, holy crap, what are you doing? Are you insane?
Yes. Right.
So to me, the approach of inner child work doesn't feel appropriate in this particular moment, not because it's not a helpful tool. Well, A, it isn't helpful because you don't really – it's not your wheelhouse. It's not what you
– Yeah. I didn't want to go there, but I kind of feel like I knew she was so in touch with what was going on.
So
that's
a note from
her childhood.
Yeah, but that's a note for you that maybe you want to learn a little bit more how to do inner child work for later. But right now, how do we meet the client where she is? What square do you think your client is in right now?
I think she's in square 2. She's creating.
Which is
Two. No, she's in square 3. She's in square 3, and she's creating. Right. She's creating her what she wants. She's creating her website. She's making it happen.
Yeah, she's got
a
plan.
She's getting stuck doing it. Mm-hmm.
She's got a plan, and she's having trouble sticking to it because stories are really coming on strong. So, Sarah, does this resonate? Does this feel?
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's my thought when I have a client who's in square 3. So let's just remember kind of what's going on here. So she said, I don't really believe the thoughts, but it's really, I'm having a tough time doing work around it, and I'm feeling stuck. That to me is a trigger that says, that's because it's a lizard fear, and no amount of work, thought work that you do around a lizard fear is going to actually help you get out of that belief system because it's doing its job, which is keeping you stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to combat, or not combat, to dissolve those belief systems, it's not going to work because, as your client shared, this is very old stuff. This is probably the stories that come up every single time Sarah's about to do something scary. Tell me where I'm wrong, Sarah.
No, you're absolutely right, and that is so refreshing to hear that no matter the amount of work I do, I won't be able to attack it this way or go about it that way. Because
yeah, and
that's
it's really
what you
just
need to try doing.
Yeah, and it's really just the gratitude that your mind is doing its job, which is trying to keep you safe. Thank you so much. These are not helpful right now.
Mm-hmm.
Go to sleep. Go play tennis, whatever. You're not helping me right now, the belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then goes back to what is it that our client is trying to accomplish? And what she's trying to accomplish is putting her work out into the world. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, that's right.
So with all of that in mind, Dee Dee, what is it that you would – we're going to set aside belief systems and inner child work. What is it that we know about square 3? When a client feels stuck, how do we create evidence that we're on a path and that we can make this happen? There's a few different ways, so I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I was thinking that I would encourage her to finish writing her story and have someone that she trusts and loves and doesn't feel judged by to read it before she puts it out there live, so that she, you're stupid, you don't know what you're doing, and who are you going to help with anyway, all those old stories wouldn't be true. If someone could, someone she trusted read it and said, this is fantastic, you know, or this is great, you know, tweak this or whatever, you know what I mean? So that would create evidence that, you know, that it would be more encouraging than being stuck in her thoughts.
Okay. How does that feel for you, Sarah?
That feels
honest.
You mean writing it down and then sharing it with someone who...
Yeah, a trusted advisor. Yep.
That feels, that feels good. Feels like I can do that. As
then?
She was, Dee Dee, as you were saying that, it brought up, and this is definitely something I wasn't thinking about before but need to address, is that it brought up some guilt about sharing, and part of a lot of my story is a lot of abuse and neglect, and guilt towards my mother, who did a lot of these things to me, and then also towards my stepfather, who abused me. So but I know that I need to share, and again, not details, but a little bit about that for the people that I need to help. So there's another stuck place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the guilt, so that part of the story, I guess, I don't know what I would advise. Obviously, I mean, there's work to be done around the guilt, but also and letting herself off the hook for telling the story, that it's okay to tell the story. I'm not sure how to coach her on advise her. I mean, the first thing that came up to me was to want to fix it and say, don't put that, you know, you can leave, you don't have to spill your whole story out there either. But then
okay,
I'm
so you're getting in, right. Yeah, you're getting into
mm-hmm.
her business.
I'm getting into
question,
her business, right.
The question I heard you just ask is, do you feel like you're letting yourself off the hook with this particular story, or does it feel like this is something we want to actually work? That's how I would approach it. Ask your client.
Mm-hmm.
No. Right, TAO.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, Sarah, is this letting yourself off the hook to tell this part of your story?
To not tell it.
I'm sorry. Just letting yourself off the hook to not tell this part of your story.
What do you mean by that, letting myself off the hook by not telling the story? Meaning?
Because you feel.
You mean if I don't put this in this particular, these things, if I don't put them in, will I be in a good way letting myself off the hook, or in a... letting myself get away with not doing the work around this?
I don't know.
Well, here's what I kind of feel like. The people that I have who have come to me, strangers who I've coached, have all, kind of like how Martha and all the master coaches talk about, all tend to have very similar. Or some part of my childhood, I completely relate to them. They've experienced something I've experienced. And I want people to feel a big part. I can feel myself getting emotional talking about this, is when we're at the meet and greet, feeling like that pain can be transformed and purpose can be found from that and healing can be found from that. And so that is my group. So it's not going to be, of course, there's lightness and laughter and joy in my coaching, but there's going to be the depth of all of that. And so I don't, and a big part of my belief is not to have people hide from what happened, with what happened to them, or feel shame about it, or feel alone, especially alone. And so those are the reasons why I feel I need to share it. And that's really, really important to me, that those people can feel that from reading my, and it's just a small little about page, but that's what I want them to feel, that they're not alone, and there's hope, and that they can overcome it. So there's where, so that's, I feel so passionate about that, and that's when I get stuck. Like I haven't, for example, just one small example, I haven't confronted my stepfather about sexual abuse that happened. So, and it's just not, he's not in my life anymore, and I don't need to, but his whole family is going to see that. And a lot of other things that a lot of people are going to see, and I think about, and then I start feeling like, oh, it's a lot to put on them. They're going to see this, and that's where I get stuck.
Sorry, right. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at your mind.
because crazy, you were so passionate about when you were telling me why you need to tell your story and how many people you this incredible opportunity to help people. It was like, wow, you had me right there. And then the lizard mind came in and just kind of stomped all over it. So I don't know what to, I mean, like you said, I can't get in her business. I can't tell her, no, you just need to go do it. But, I see
you want me
it.
To demo
I
a couple?
Yeah.
Let me demonstrate a couple of things for you. Is that okay, Sarah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, Sarah, whose business are you in when you start feeling guilty about sharing your story?
I am in a lot of people's business. And I didn't even think about it that way. But, at least 20 people.
Yeah. But I really am curious, why is it a problem if your abusive stepfather's family sees and reads your story and understands the experience you had growing up? Why is that a problem?
You know, as you said that, as I said, I've done a lot of inner child work. I saw myself as that little girl and felt like, wow, Jesus, this is an example of me not being a good parent to her by not allowing her to have a voice and be seen and being so concerned. I'm being the adult that everyone was around me. Like, let me take care of everyone else and make sure everyone else feels okay instead of taking care of that little girl, and I haven't thought about it that way.
I also noticed that you mentioned when you were, and Didi caught this as well, when you were talking about your story, the moment you got back into your business, the moment you started thinking about your tribe, the people who you are meant to serve, the moment you lit up and the entire energy on the whole call shifted. You were confident, you were clear, you were purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me where I'm wrong. That's how I experienced it.
No, that's how it's almost like I feel like I'm in darkness, and then when I was talking about that, I felt so much, there's just so much light.
Interesting. The thing that you said that really captured me, though, sorry to interrupt, I wanted to share this, is you said, I want to help people who are feeling alone and feeling the shame of their own story. Notice how this cycle that you're in right now is perpetuating loneliness and shame for that child within you. Just notice that. Does that resonate?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a cycle you want to keep?
No.
So how do you want to proceed from here? What is it that you need in order to get your story out into the world in a way that doesn't shut you down?
Well, even as you said that, something really shifted. I felt like almost like the mama bear to my little girl. I felt like I want to protect her, and I want my story to be told, and I felt empowered as you said that, really empowered.
Okay.
So thank you for saying that. And
getting into the practicalities of actually doing it, though, because that's the block for you. It's like, okay, great, I feel empowered, and now what? What's next for you?
So I like the idea of what Didi was saying, of maybe allowing myself to write all the content and write just completely freely, not thinking about who's going to be seeing this, and then sharing it with maybe even a few the women in my coaching group. That feels really safe and good.
Mm-hmm.
So I can do that. And what else can I do?
So what would that look like? Let's just leave it there for a second.
Uh-huh.
What does that literally look like in order for you to... So, Didi, what I'm doing here, just so you can observe,
mm-hmm.
I'm actually taking the client into Turtle Steps, because it's very easy mm-hmm. to say, oh, I'm going to write my story. I'm going to finish writing my story, and then I'm going to share it with my trusted advisors.
Mm-hmm.
The problem then is, like, okay, well, when Sarah hangs up the phone, what's the first thing she's going to do? Because that's so often, if we leave it there, that's where she gets stuck again.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sorry, I'm pulling back the curtain for you there, Sarah. But so, Sarah, what – tell me exactly what you're going to do next. How will you finish this story?
I think that I should – something that's really helpful for me is beginning – so I was actually planning on doing it after this call – sit down and take 20 minutes to meditate before I begin writing. It's really helpful for me. And then spend an hour – and maybe just give myself that amount of time writing. I almost feel like I kind of want to just write everything that comes to me in terms of the about stuff, my story, and I can cut it down later, but just getting it all out within that hour.
Okay.
And
So why don't you just leave it there? So that's the first 24 hours.
Okay.
So my suggestion is once you finish writing, free writing for an hour, check back in with yourself. What is the next step? And use Didi, I'm volunteering,
mm-hmm. yeah.
as your partner on this, and report back. And you can report back to her. You can report back to the whole group on Facebook, on our forum. Mm-hmm. Tell us what your next step is. It might be editing the story. It might be letting the story rest for 24 hours, and then you're going to email your friends and say, this is coming. Is that okay? Whatever it might be.
Okay.
Does that feel achievable?
Yeah, that feels so great. And actually, when I did the Colby test, one of the things it said was, I'm high quicks there, but it said give it urgency or give it away. And I don't give things enough, you know, a time frame enough, and then it just feels overwhelming, and then I do nothing. So that actually feels really great and so much less overwhelming than thinking of I was sitting down with – I was going through every single class we've taken regarding story and marketing and feeling, like, really overwhelmed by all of that too. So this feels great.
So the urgency is that you know within the next 48 hours or so you're going to have a story or the framework of a story that you're going to want to share with your trusted advisors.
Yeah.
So however you can create that space for it, also make sure when you ask for feedback, and this is advice, this is just general advice for everybody, when you ask for feedback from someone, be very specific on what the purpose is for the passage that you're going to be sharing. Especially since this is, you're talking about using this on a website. Mm-hmm. But this is the purpose, asking, does this feel appropriate for a website? Remember, they're going to have their own stories, so you get to ignore their stories. And then also giving them very specific direction on what feedback you're looking for and how you want to receive it. Some people are going to be like, oh, you gave me a story. Let me edit it with grammatical things. If that's not what you're looking for, make sure you let people know that.
Okay.
So that's
great.
Practical
Thanks
advice. Yes, I gave you advice. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I think I would have just sent it and said, hi, can you tell me what you think?
Yeah, so what I'm trying to do there for you is just to kind of set you up for success on getting feedback in a very specific way.
Okay.
Because I know, as your coach, I know that you're trying to get your story out into the world for people to actually consume.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're starting with Dee Dee's excellent suggestion of creating witnesses for your story, we still have that long-term purpose or ideal of getting this out into the world. It's very important that people know that when they're interacting with you. Otherwise, they're going to come back with all sorts of shit advice.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Or no advice, like, or feedback. It's like,
right,
like crickets. Or it's like a deluge of, like, yeah, I really didn't need you to punctuate that for me.
Right.
So how are you feeling now, Sarah? Do you feel... going on for you?
I feel much better, and I was really actually it felt really great to connect into my truth of why I'm supposed to be doing this and helping people, and it was such a good reminder because I was getting so stuck in my reptilian brain, just completely, you know, terrified and stuck. So that felt really wonderful, and doing it this way, just so, and I, it's so funny because I know this about myself, but I haven't taken these really direct steps, these small steps. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and just thinking about it that way has been really, really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. So how is that for you, Dee Dee? What's the, what?
I think that's yeah, no, the takeaway for me is I can see now that I would hopefully next time would want to say, hey, why do you want to tell your story? What is the purpose? And maybe go that way first as opposed to trying to figure out why she's going into this dark, you know, the shutdown place and trying to fix that and just get. But I love the way, I mean, thank you for doing that because I can see the breakdown, the baby, the turtle steps are so important just to get them to, like, just to get someone to really do something that's connected with their purpose, like get them focused on the purpose and get them out of
their story,
their negative thinking, their story. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately other people's business, because that's what was happening for.
Yeah,
someone.
That was huge. Like, whose business are you in? Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately some of the coaching advice that I'd give you is definitely stick to what you know in terms of, I'm not saying stay in your comfort zone, you know, definitely make sure that you stretch yourself and challenge yourself to try new things as a coach, but also trust that you have what you need within you. Sometimes it's just asking really, really good questions. Like don't, asking good questions or throwing hunches, like don't keep your hunches a secret. I feel like sometimes as coaches we get so, and this is maybe just for me, maybe you guys don't resonate, but I used to be like, I have to be so clever here that I need to make sure that I work my client into this place of, it's like sometimes just say what you're thinking. And I think that, because there were a couple times you had a hunch, and once I asked you what your hunch was or what you were thinking about, it was a really powerful insight. And you can certainly propose something to a client, like finish writing the story and give it to trusted loved ones to read and say, how does that feel for you in your body compass? If you were to finish mm-hmm. writing your story and giving it, look, on a scale of negative 10 to positive 10, where do you feel it? How do you feel it? What's the number? So that's a way that you can put sort of an idea forward to somebody, but then you give the control and all the responsibility back to the client to tell you. It's like you telling them where it's like, tell me where I'm wrong. It's like, use your body compass. Mm-hmm. How does that feel? Does that fit in with the larger goal that you have, which is to get your work out into the world? Does this task, this idea support it?
So you can
give, you can propose something and put forth an idea of a next step, and then you give the control back to the client and say, steer me on this one. How does it feel in your body? Does this feel right? Does it help take you closer to where you want to go? Because ultimately, my guess is that Sarah's wig, and these are my words, Sarah, so you tell me where I'm off base, but is to help heal people and give hope back to people who've been abused.
Mm-hmm.
Give them the light.
Yeah.
That pain can be transformed and purpose can be found. That's part of Sarah's mission. Finishing writing your story and giving it to trusted loved ones to read serve that, helping you accomplish that? So do you see what I mean, Dee Dee? It's like a way to kind of throw a hunch or put out an idea and then temper yourself so you're not getting into advice giving.
Yes, I love that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to say, too, is, like, if you're feeling uncertainty in how to proceed, it's fine to be open with a client to a point. We don't want to make your uncertainty or your lack of confidence as a coach their problem, but it's certainly okay to express questions about it. Like, so here's where I'm feeling a little unclear, Sarah, and this is a hypothetical, I'm not actually unclear, is why is it that you feel you actually have to confront him? Do you really need to do that? Why do you feel that you need to do that? Right? And Sarah already answered that through her own conversation. But if you're sort of in that stuck place of like, so I'm a little unclear. It's like it sounds like you want to get your story out there, but you keep having these old stories cropping up. What do you think's going on here? I think that's pretty much what I did. What do you think's going on? Clients know themselves, and they're often onto themselves. If they're like, I have no idea, what that does is it gives you a little bit of space and time to get your own opinion formed, and then tell me what. It sounds like you're in what business are you in? It sounds like you're in your mom's business. Why? What are you afraid will happen if you do this? Do you see what I'm saying, Dee Dee? Mm-hmm. It's a way to move through uncertainty without giving the uncertainty to the client, without getting stuck, but also getting in. You know, you may not know because your client may not know, and you're asking questions will help you both get clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So my biggest suggestion for you is really there's a voice inside your head that's being like, what? This doesn't make sense. This isn't jiving. Give a little bit of space to that voice. And then give a voice to that voice. Be its conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, you're saying you really want to get your work out into the world, but on the other hand, you're letting this kind of get in your way. What do you think's going on? I don't know. You tell me. Okay, well, good. What do you think is going on? Right? There's so many wonderful possibilities that open up.
Right.
Good news. She wasn't paying us.
All right. Oh, my God. Thank you for all your help.
Thank you. And I would love for you to listen to your session in the beginning so that you could start to see, if I had felt a little more comfortable, I would have asked this. If I had felt a little like I had a little bit more space, I would have done this.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you for being so open. I really appreciate it. Any questions from anybody about sort of the approach, the conversation. I mean, there's lots of different ways we could have gone with Sarah. I really was just listening to where she might want to go. So know that you might have had a hunch or an idea that would have taken us in a different direction, but ultimately probably would have created a similar result. Any comments or questions for anybody about that session? Choices I made? Okay. Well, that was easy. Evie's like, shut up. No, why isn't? All right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you so much, Dee Dee. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dee Dee, very much.
Oh, thank you.
So what's next? We've got Rachel, who's going to be our client, and we need a coach. You can see I don't bite hard. Who would like to be our next coach? Oh, my gosh, I heard someone. Who is it? I don't want to get in Rachel's business, but you guys are going to hurt her feelings.
Oh, no, it's okay.
I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. So who would be willing to jump in? Okay, if you coached last time, it's totally fine. Do I need to start calling names? That's my least favorite thing to do, but I'll do it. All right. Hope, have you coached in a while?
I don't know, but I've only slept 4 hours last night because my flight was delayed for so long, and I'm not really at the top of my game. I was going to volunteer to coach next week, if that's okay.
Okay. So?
Jessica, I'll do it. It's Lisa.
I was just going to call your name.
Yay!
Awesome. So
now I look willing.
Ew, good job. So everybody heard it, though. Hope is coaching next week. Awesome.
Yes, so, Hope is coaching next week. She will make sure she gets lots of sleep the night before.
And I just want to say I've had to coach when I haven't had a lot of sleep, so it's always a good skill to practice, but I get why you don't want to do it on the phone with me right now. So, Lisa, thank you for volunteering.
Welcome.
Tell me, what role would you like me to take?
I would love feedback as soon as you have an inkling.
Okay, if I feel like you're going, yeah, so I will get involved early. Perfect. And so, perfect. So just, Rachel's your client. Have at it.
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hi, Lisa. I'm okay. How are you?
Doing great. Tell me what's on your mind today.
Well, I have a couple of things on my mind, and I wasn't sure where to go today. I guess the most compelling thing is this merit-based scholarship for high school that my older daughter applied for, and it was a long, involved application, and it's kind of a big thing at her school. A lot of the kids apply for it, and they only give out 30 across the country, but a couple kids from her school get it every year, and so that's why we were like, well, you know, she really could at least get to the interview stage or whatever. And then on Friday, I was literally at her end of the school year party as one of the parent sort of chaperones, and I got the email that she did not get to the interview stage. And then her best friend was coming over. I was kind of helping because it was shortened school day and her mom's out of town, so she came and slept at our house. And I found out from texting with her mom that her best friend did get to the next stage, and it just really tweaked me. And I was so anxious, just kind of like holding this piece of information that I didn't want to share with my daughter while her friend was here. I thought it was only fair to let her process that on her own without, you know, not in front of a friend, and then also not needing to necessarily know her friend's business. And I didn't sleep well that night at all. And then in the morning, when her friend left, I told her, and she was very pretty resilient, like, oh, okay. You know, she didn't ask about if I knew any of her friends', you know, statuses. And I think actually probably both of her closest friends are moving on in this process. And so I just was like in this like heightened state of anxiety, and it's made me feel kind of bad, and I haven't been able to shake it off, even though she shook it off much better than I have. And I, it's just kind of like this cloud that's still over me that I can't quite, part of it is like maybe anticipating dealing with these moms who's one of the moms is a friend of mine, and I don't have confirmation that her daughter is proceeding, but I'm just very confident that she is. And I feel like she'll use this piece of information. She's sort of always trying to gather information about why her kid is better, you know, better than, and I feel like this will be a big thing. And I'm not insecure about my kid. Like I don't need that accolade for her, but I just am sort of like bracing myself for the dealing with the other personalities involved and having to hear about it. And also worried that once my daughter does know that her friends are moving on this process, that then she will feel worse about it. So I don't exactly know why it's got me so bummed, but it does.
It's a big deal. It sounds like you've made it. What have you made it mean? Let's go there. What does this mean to you?
I guess I made it mean that, you know, first of all, it's worth about $200,000. And that would have just been awesome. Like, it doesn't mean, I mean, just flat out. Like, it doesn't mean she can't go. It's not a financial aid scholarship. It's merit-based. So it wasn't about whether or not we can send her. You know, she can still go. They also offer, as part of the scholarship, they help you through the process of selecting a high school. And I'm kind of like, I know that's going to largely fall onto my plate to help her deal with that. And like, I'm pretty overwhelmed by the various choices and then the application. And, you know, even if you do find a school that you love, do you get in and all that stuff? It's very competitive where we live. And I don't know. I guess it's the mama bear. Part of it is this mama bear that I feel protective of her. And I'm sure part of it is ego-driven on my part, because I think that's the piece of, like, imagining these other moms I'm going to have to interact with. You know, that's all about ego, theirs and mine. So I don't know. I guess I'm not sure why she didn't get selected, and I'm disappointed for her. She had to jump through a lot of hoops to do this application, like take the ACT for juniors in high school, you know, as a seventh grader, and she threw herself into that with her typical kind of openness and intensity, and I don't know, I kind of wish I just hadn't even had her apply, even though I know that that's like not, like, you get grit from trying and failing and picking yourself back up. I do know that, but I feel protective of her, I guess. I don't really know why I can't quite get over it. It's just like this pit in my stomach that hasn't let go.
That sounds really uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yes.
So, Lisa, what do you think is going on here for your client?
Oh, I can feel a lot of disappointment and anxiousness about having to deal with the other moms, and potentially that her daughter is going to react strongly later, that her friends got to the next step and she didn't. All that's wrapped into this fear of
what?
Of not being enough, her daughter not being enough, not being, you know, taken to the next level of this. Big picture, it's she, it's a harder road for not getting to the next step. She's got to be the one to choose the high school and make all these decisions, and she's got to learn fast, it sounds like.
So is that what you think is going on for her, or is that what you think in general? Do you agree with what's going on with her? Are you believing the...
No, I think that's her story.
Good. Okay. I just want to make sure. You sounded so convincing. I was like, uh-oh.
See, I can get there.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good because it really helps us be compassionate. So I heard some similar things. So I do agree. It feels like there's this underlying belief system around it's going to be harder for my daughter and for me because she didn't get this. Well, it's going to be harder for me because my daughter didn't get the scholarship. That was sort of the note that I heard kind of going through. Rachel,
yeah.
How does that land with you?
Yeah, I guess I feel like I'm worried it's going to be harder for her. Like it would have made things so much easier. It would have just been this like amazing path that would have helped her and taken some of the pressure off of me too. But it's got to be about me, right? Because I'm like having this strong reaction to it. It's definitely about me. I just, maybe it's a not good enough. The not good enough hits harder than the harder, you know, then it's going to be harder for me. Like those two things that you guys were talking about.
So what was the not enough that resonated?
Just that it's somehow that, like my, I can intellectually say like, well, you know, I don't really know what the criteria, you know, you never really know what the criteria is for, a selection process. They aren't completely transparent with what they're looking for. And, so it's not about my daughter not being good enough, but then the rejection feels like really personal, even though I'm trying hard to intellectualize it. It does feel
like my daughter.
Somehow she wasn't good enough.
Got it. Okay. So thank you. So Lisa, thinking about, I just kind of want to understand, like, if you know, where do you want to go? Kind of knowing that those two thoughts, belief systems are being triggered pretty hard right now. Where would you want to go? And you could just go there, but I just, that's my question is like, where do you go from here?
I feel like this is a square one time.
Yeah.
She's kind of grieving about the rejection and the whole process and worried about what that means. I'd start with thought work, but I'm not sure what the thought is yet.
So there's two that I wrote down.
Right.
It's going to be harder for my daughter. My daughter wasn't good enough.
Hmm.
So you can ask the client and you can spend time kind of honing those, but those are the two that basically Rachel just kind of served up to us in the last 5 minutes or so.
Okay.
So you can keep going. I just wanted to kind of know what your thought process was, so thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rachel. So we've heard a couple of big main thoughts in the last couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Did either of those really call out to you as, oh, yes, that's it, it's going to be harder for my daughter, or my daughter wasn't good enough?
Well, the interesting thing is that I definitely was raised in this real, like, compare and just I mean, it wasn't that compare and despair was bad. It was like everything was compared. That like we were, I don't know why I'm so emotional about this, but.
Oh, take a breath. Just breathe.
Okay, that as children, my sisters and I were very negatively compared to everybody around us, from both my parents really, but really from my mom a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's more that I feel like this is, and I don't know, maybe it's really the same thing, but I feel like it's more like that I feel like these other children, like her closest friends, are better. Not that she's not good enough, because, like, she just is in every way, and I know that. But it's more that these other kids are somehow better, I guess. That this somehow proves that they're better. Or that it looks like that or something.
And does that trigger your parenting
It triggers like stuff from my childhood about myself, you know, so she's an extension of me.
Right. Because the other kids may have gone.
I mean, as a parent, I look at those other children and like, I wouldn't trade my child for those children. I mean, I adore my daughter. So, I just feel like it's somehow, you know, it doesn't hold up to any sort of intellectual scrutiny, but just the emotions behind it are somehow like, oh, like, I'm not good enough, and then therefore, of course, my kid's not good enough, something like that, or that they're better than, other people are better than me, and other people are better than my kid.
I'm wondering if we should take this thought and move forward into the questions around it when we question with the work. What I heard was other kids are better than my child.
Yeah.
And the first question is that true?
No.
Sit with that a minute.
Yeah.
How do you react when you believe that thought? You get the email on Friday and you start going down that road. Other kids are better than my kid. How do you feel?
Well, I was just like sitting in between a couple of the parents who also had applied for this, and we all have our phones out because our kids are at multiple different end of the school year parties. And so I knew that I got this email and they didn't, because I could see, I mean, I was sitting there, but so it was just sort of this out of body experience, and I felt panicky and like I needed to like walk away and like collect myself, but I couldn't because I'm like chaperoning 60 kids. And I sort of like didn't get to take care of myself, because then I had my own daughter and her friend, you know, it like delayed this process of sort of being able to somehow, but it just made me feel panicky and this like swirling negative energy that's like trapped inside my body. I guess that's the best way I can describe it.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's a familiar feeling from long ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's like overwhelming anxiety.
Yeah. And how do you treat yourself when you feel that way?
I don't really know how to take care of myself when I feel like that, I guess. Which also makes me feel panicky. Like, I know I'm feeling like this, and I don't know how to make myself feel better. And I did try. I tried to do the work, and I kept kind of, I was like, I can't really do this on my own. I couldn't find any turnarounds that made sense for me, you know, like like my daughter should have gotten this scholarship and then she shouldn't have, and I could come up with a few reasons for why she shouldn't have, but I couldn't come up with any other turnarounds for it than that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really making me feel better.
Yes.
Sometimes it's hard to do by yourself, too. You're so close to the situation. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. My other question is, in this situation, thinking the thought other kids are better than mine, how do you treat your daughter?
Well, I kind of treated her, I was like afraid to tell her because I was afraid of what it was going to trigger for her. You know, like she's going to think that these kids are better than her too. I really think that's like almost the source of the panic, was that she was going to think that, and I don't want her to think that, and I've worked really hard as a parent not to perpetuate that pattern of, you know, parenting. So I don't do that very conscientiously. I don't do that to my children. I don't compare them to other people. And so this begs the comparison, and I'm very fearful of that, you know, for her. I don't want her to have that. And so I guess maybe that's why she just said, okay. And she didn't even ask about the other kids because that's not like in the forefront of her mind because she's not used to being compared to other people all the time, you know?
Interesting.
So I guess that was, she's very competitive, like with herself, and she holds herself to very high standards. So I knew she was going to be disappointed. But she didn't go right to, like, well, what about these two friends? What about, you know, what's going on with them? She didn't ask, and she still hasn't.
Hmm. Anything else when you think that thought?
When I think the thought, what's the thought?
Other kids are better than my daughter.
Oh, the other kids are better. I mean, no, I don't think these other kids are better than my kid. I don't think that. I couldn't quite get myself out of this feeling, and I didn't know why. But, yeah, I don't. Nothing else is coming up for what I think about that.
Okay. Now we get to pretend that an alien has come down and taken that one thought, that one ability to think that thought, that other kids are somehow better than your daughter, and taken that away. You cannot think that feeling anymore. You think that thought anymore. And you're in the same situation on Friday, and you get that message, and you don't have that thought anymore. Who would you be without the thought?
Well, I had already thought about the sort of unintended negative side of getting the scholarship, which is that it kind of makes the other kids in the class and the other parents think like, oh, you think you're so great. They kind of expect everything you do, if you're the winner of this, to be incredibly amazing. It tends to separate the kids out from the group of these already very high-achieving kids, and I definitely don't want that for my daughter, who already can, you know, not always be in the swing of things in the group. And, you know, she's very interested in going to public high school. And I thought, gosh, if you get this scholarship, there's no way you're going to look at public high schools. But she's very interested in doing that and has a list of reasons why. And I think that they're great, good reasons. And so I knew that was a negative thing. I also think it's tough for your sibling who's definitely not, they're not going to give two of these to the same family. So, you know, Charity has a sister who's well aware of her high-achieving older sister, and, you know, I had lots of reasons, so I probably would have thought about those.
Mm.
And I would have thought, I hope that her friends are going to get it. You know, I hope they fared better. I hope they're going to get it.
So you would be, sounds like
I would be open, and I wouldn't be threatened. I would be instead of spinning and reeling, I would have been able to still be present. I mean, it was like I literally was having an out-of-body experience sitting at that party, and I could have still sat at the table and enjoyed the company of the people I was with. I could have been a more present lifeguard. I mean, I'm literally like watching 60 kids in the pool, and I was like totally not even sitting there. So I would have been present and open.
Mm-hmm. All good things.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hearing is with the thought, you had an out-of-body experience. You were not taking mm-hmm. care of yourself through the weekend until the friends left, and you were comparing and all of the swirling negative energy feelings from childhood came up, and then without the thought, you're not spinning and you stay present, and you could enjoy the experience of hearing others experience whether or not they got it or not, and being a mm-hmm. lifeguard and just staying present. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you ready to try some turnarounds on?
Sure.
So I just want to say that in the interest of time, let's just practice one turnaround, and then we can practice kind of leaving the session unfinished. So, okay.
So the original thought was other kids are better than my daughter. What turnarounds can you see?
So I can see other kids are not better than my daughter. That one's the obvious one that I could get to, but I couldn't get to other ones. I wonder if you could help me get to a different one than that.
Let's see. Other kids. What about the self? How would that work? Jessica, what would the other turnarounds be?
I think there's a variety you could try.
I am better than my daughter.
Other kids are not better than my daughter. Yeah. My daughter is not. No, let's not do that one. I am. Oh gosh, these are hard, huh? Oh my God, I have a limiting belief. Well, let's ask some of the other folks, because, I mean, I could sit here and rattle something off, but I'd love to hear what are some of the other turnarounds you guys saw. Help your sisters out. Nothing, really? Come on.
How about my daughter is better than other kids?
How does that feel?
It's like I really try not to do that with my kids, you know, like they're better than somebody or somebody's better than them. I mean, that's really the model that I grew up with that I try not to think of. But I certainly think she's better than other kids in certain ways, you know, like she's a better artist than some kids who aren't good at art, you know, or whatever.
It's
not one that, like, knocks it out of the park for me, like, doesn't.
It feels like it's kind of perpetuating the same limiting belief.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. There's a comparison there. That isn't helpful, but thank you so much for the suggestion, because certainly that would pulled up.
I have another one, and that's I am better than, and I'm going to use the term my child, but what I mean by that is my inner child, or the small me, the me that believes this lie.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, like I am better than the feelings that this is bringing up for me or something like that.
Yeah. Or I'm better than the child that I'm stepping back into when this is activating me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also just the practical, my daughter is worse than other kids academically. Which, again, it gets into that comparison, but it starts to loosen up some of the pain.
Yeah.
Can I throw one out?
Sure, yeah.
Yes.
My daughter is better than my inner child?
Yeah. Certainly healthier. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, try that, healthier. I think that's really powerful. Because I think we're getting stuck on this word better.
Better.
Yeah.
She's better than, which is really so subjective.
Yeah.
So my daughter is healthier than my daughter is healthier than other kids.
Yeah.
I mean.
I like that better.
Yeah. So here's my suggestion, since we're sort of at the end of the session here, is I'd love for you guys, if you could maybe meet and work on a few of those and come up with some examples of how that might be true. I'm also going to reach out to a friend of mine. I don't know if you guys know Erin Kutchel, but she's a wonderful work person. The work person. I'm going to ask her, how do you deal with something like better? Because honestly, I don't feel good just making some shit up here. I'm going to reach out to her and just see if she might even have a suggestion on how do you work with the nuance of better than. And then she'll probably have to coach me.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we could all be in on that call.
Right. Well, we'll record it if we do it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to email her and then we'll just be really quick. I think ultimately better, I think it's probably kind of taking that word out of it. My daughter is healthier than other kids. I am healthier than my daughter when I, you know, putting some caveats around it, but really getting clear on what the better than is. So how was that for you, Rachel, to kind of talk through that and have such a compassionate witness to kind of guide you?
It was great because I know Lisa, and it made me tempted to talk about this other more business-related matter that she has some background on when she was the one coaching me. But then I decided, no, I'm going to go where the pain is right now, even though it's not something I want to talk about. And I sat at the beginning part of the call during the other coaching session, like debating in my head, like, do I really want to talk about this on this group call? But I'm really glad I did. And just to kind of like, because I kind of was like getting down on myself, like, oh, this is some weird ego thing I can't get over. And so it was good to talk about it and realize, like, no, it's actually more about like this wounded inner child. It's not some ego thing about my kid, because my kid gets plenty of accolades, and I don't. That's not why I love her and adore her. Do you know what I mean? So that was
it's literally really confusing me.
Yeah,
I think it has nothing to do with your daughter, but is triggered a very, very deep and painful story around your. I mean, that's where the tears came up. Is when
you're
thinking about your own. So, I'll talk about how you can maybe take better care of yourself in that moment when you get hooked next time.
Yeah.
So I'll ask. I'm going to ask Erin for some help around turnarounds. But I'd love if you two continue playing with ideas. And really digging in to what, because I think you might get to the root of kind of what's going on there.
Okay.
A bit more deeply. So how was that for you, Lisa?
I am so honored that Rachel trusted me and decided to pour her heart on this really sensitive new thing. it felt good. At first it was, I had a hard time getting into it. I feel a little, you know, on a group call, it's just a little challenging.
Yeah.
But I love the work and love the process, and I think we can definitely continue.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to be a little bit more of go a little bit more rogue on turnarounds than probably traditional work facilitators would want, which is why I want to check with Erin. But,
yeah.
You know, I would encourage you to go a bit rogue on this, like we started to do there around changing out the word better than to healthy. I just want to make sure that I give you a little bit more clarity around the real way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately this is one of those beliefs that this is my opinion, take it for what it's worth, is I think that's one of those belief systems that because it's so fraught with sort of historical meaning, you know, personal meaning mm-hmm. for Rachel, that it's probably good to really spend time unpacking it and turning mm-hmm. it around in a variety of different ways. Yeah, we can do the quote real way, which I think there's a lot of power in that, but also giving yourself permission to be very improvisational. That's my
that makes sense.
So there were a couple of things I just wanted to point out, too, that came up, a couple of limiting beliefs. I don't know how to make myself feel better when I'm in this situation. I think that can quickly become a story for you as well
mm-hmm.
and can tap into that very young part of you and would be worth
yeah.
examining, perhaps with Lisa, I don't know. And then also this begs comparison to what I think you were referring to is to your own childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some ways that the reason that caught me isn't necessarily because in and of itself that's a limiting belief, but it might be something that you use as a weapon against yourself. Like, oh, well, of course this is coming up because, I'm like, can't you just separate it out? Right, it becomes this opening or this entry into a more painful beliefs. And so when I heard you say it in the way you said it, I was like, woof, there's a little something juicy there.
Okay.
And ultimately that's Lisa's job to decide if you guys want to, well, it's your job, but it's, you know, you don't have to follow up on that if it doesn't resonate. So let's talk a little bit about, so first of all, I think you did a great job. Lisa, I thought you were really nice. I like how you summarized. I think you did a really nice job of using the work. One thing I just want you guys to notice is that you said the belief, other kids are better than my daughter, and there was this immediate response, no. And the feeling of that was, I like how you said, let's just sit with that for a moment or for a minute, Lisa. Because I've noticed sometimes, especially with coaches, we are so onto ourselves that we don't even just let ourselves believe it and kind of go into the misery of it for a moment
mm-hmm.
before we respond, no, of course it's not true. Because if it were, of course it's not true, there wouldn't be so much suffering around it. And so I like how you just gave that moment to your client, to Rachel, to just be with, because that's where the suffering is. Let's let our client really be with it, because the next thing is, how do you react when you believe that thought? And so you start actually getting and tapping into it. So I like how you did that, Lisa. But I've also noticed, and this is really for everybody, watch for if a client immediately says no, and if it feels like it might be a little bit of a hollow no, like it might be, well, I'm telling you what I think you need to hear, because I know it should be no. I've gotten really bratty myself when I'm having somebody do the work with me. I will let myself have that belief so I can really feel it versus being like, well, I know as a master coach I should not be believing mm-hmm. it. Let yourself believe it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
So otherwise, I think you did a beautiful job, especially given the short amount of time that we had, and I really appreciated your thoughtfulness. Thank you to everybody who took the time to respond with some turnarounds. I love that you guys proposed things, and then we had a moment to kind of talk about it sort of objectively, too, because it shows us that sometimes turnarounds aren't as obvious as we'd like them to be, and that there is that opportunity for conversation and to have a client say, no, that doesn't resonate with me. That doesn't mean you did something wrong as much as it means that you're open and honest and having an honest conversation with the client. I would even sort of challenge my client to say, my daughter is better than other kids. I would even just kind of challenge yourself to maybe be like, create a little evidence for it, and then let it go if it really feels horrible. But sometimes a turnaround doesn't feel good, and the challenge is finding evidence for the turnaround that does feel good. So it might not out of the gate feel like my daughter is better than other kids, but you can say, well, she's better in the sense that she's healthier, we have a more open relationship, right? It gives you a chance to kind of find evidence without actually making a qualitative judgment about other children. Does that make sense, Rachel?
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Well,
this is Lisa.
We're
out of the situation now. I wish we could rewind and pick a different word because it's such a loaded word, better. I think other kids are achieving more, might have gone further in the turnarounds.
Yeah, exactly. But
like that.
And I think that's the challenge with language is sometimes we kind of pick what we've got in the moment, and in the turnarounds we realize, well, we need to be more specific.
Right.
I think it's okay to be more specific. So, you know, coaching is such an art that really we do our best, and we get to rewind, and that we get to change the word when we do the turnaround.
Right on.
You know, so perfect. So here's my final thought, and I'm sorry to talk so fast, but I'm cognizant of the time. So there's an immediate tool I use when I am hooked in a very deep pattern, because what I heard for you, Rachel, is that what came up for you had nothing to do with your daughter, clearly, because she was totally okay with it.
Right.
It had something to do with an old story you have, and I mean like an old wound, not an old story like, oh, it's an old story. I mean like an old wound.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm hooked into an old wound or an old sort of karmic pattern, I use a very simple tool, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this. I might have talked about it at your meet and greet, but it's called Shenpa. It's a tool that, or it's a concept. It's a Tibetan Buddhist concept that Pema Chodron talks a lot about. And Shenpa is a very, what she calls three difficult practices, but there are three very simple steps. And the first one is to notice that you're hooked. So in that moment, the goal moving forward now is to notice when you feel like that, because that means you're hooked into a story. You don't even need to know what the story is, because that became the challenge for you. It's like, oh, I need to put my finger on the story so I can stop it. Really, just noticing that you're hooked into an old pattern is hugely helpful. So step one, notice that you're hooked. Oh, here it is. There's that feeling. I'm panicky. I have a swirling negative feeling. I feel outside my body. I'm hooked. Step two, get back in your body through breath. Take a few deep, take as many, three usually is that reset, you know, the three breaths. And then do what you would normally, do something different than what you would normally do. That's step three. My suggestion, the things that I do that are different are, especially when I'm getting into a future that's never happened or a past that is already past.
Yeah.
Is just everything is fine. I'm just a mom, and I am just sitting here chaperoning 50 kids. This means nothing. Nothing has changed. Everything is okay. Like I have a little mantra just to bring me back to the present. And I keep breathing, and I keep breathing until that moment is past. The other one that I'll do, again, the key is to do something different than what you would normally do. The other one that I would do is I do the fact or fiction tool. Are you familiar with that tool?
No.
This is a wonderful one, especially for children and their academic achievements. fact, I just got an email. Fact, in the email they told me that my daughter was not asked to move forward. Fiction, other kids are better than my daughter. My daughter's going to be disappointed. I've let my daughter down. What were the other things you had? This means more fiction. This means more work for me. Fiction. This means more stress for me. Fiction. This means more competition. Fiction. This means more, right? The fact, my daughter applied for a scholarship. My daughter was not asked to proceed with the scholarship. Fiction, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But actually taking the time to identify the facts of a story versus the fiction of a story can help bring you back to center. That may not work for you. That may not be your thing. But sometimes that can be very, very helpful for me.
I like that.
Especially because the work sounded like you were a little too in your head, like a little too out of your body and a little too in your head to actually have it work. Whereas, you know, do something different than what you're normally doing. Okay, the work wasn't working. Try something different.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very helpful for any client who's having a razzmatazz kind of reaction. I don't know what that means, but it makes me giggle.
But I know how it feels. Yeah.
It's spectacularly horrible. It's usually like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the breath is so key because you did. You had this huge flight response.
Mm-hmm.
You literally wanted to run.
Yes.
If you can't run, sometimes even just getting up and being like, oh, I'm cold, and then running in place, even if that's not really happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can help bring you back. But the key is do something different than what you would normally do in that situation. And what it sounds like what you normally would do is, you know, get right out of your body and then and try and pretend it didn't happen. I don't know. I mean, there's probably a variety of things you do in that situation. But taking care of yourself is not one of them. So how can you
right.
take care of yourself? That's the key. All right. I've kept you guys way too long.
Thank you. I was totally worth it for me. I hope everyone else agrees.
Oh, I would hope so. It was worth it for me. That's all that really matters, isn't it? Absolutely. Thank you so much. Awesome, awesome job. Just remember, like, just showing up for a client is such a huge gift. So if you did that today, you gave all of us a huge gift. You really did. I will talk to you guys next week. And in the meantime, if you guys could follow, so Rachel, you're going to follow up with Lisa, and Sarah, you're going to follow up with Dee Dee on your individual sort of practices. So you're going to work on kind of finishing up the turnarounds, Rachel and Lisa, and then Sarah and Dee Dee, you guys are going to check back in on your turtle steps. Sound good?
Great. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you. Talk soon. And I'll follow up with Aaron. So love you guys. Take care.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.